Oceanside Park.
G'day everyone and welcome to this edition of the Big W Podcast. My name's Kevin Hillier, the media manager for the Werribee Football Club. Just a little note that all the information you need about any resumption of play, any news we have regarding the starting of the season or the cancellation of the season or whatever is happening with the season, you can be able to find out all that information via all our social media platforms, be it our Twitter account, our Facebook account, Instagram, or of course our website, all the details there. Of everything you need to know of news coming out of the Werribee Football Club, we'll let you know as soon as we possibly can because, like you, we're hanging out for it at a million miles an hour. The podcast this week, once again, brought to you by ABC Homes and Corio Waste Management. So we thank our terrific sponsors and supporters for hanging with us and staying with us in season 2020. It's very different for all of us, and we do appreciate the support not only of ABC Homes and Corio Waste, but also Belan Holden and Pacific Werribee. I'll tell you a little more about them shortly. But just to let you know what's on this podcast, our club patron since the early 2000s has been Julia Gillard, the 27th Prime Minister of this country. Thought an opportune time we catch up with Julia and see what she's been up to during the lockdown. Of course, also chair these days of Beyond Blue, an organisation that we've had a very long and distinguished past and association with over many, many years now. And, of course, we play Box Hill each year for the Beyond Blue Cup. And, well, let's hope we can play them again for it this year. But if that doesn't happen, certainly our support of Beyond Blue will continue. We'll talk to Julia about Beyond Blue and about some of the other work that she's up to at the moment as our club patron for the last just on 20 years. Also going to catch up with a new face, another new face at the Werribee Football Club, and that's our new club doctor. Who checked in at the start of the year and sort of checked out almost as quickly. Dr. Rebecca Beaton is our club doctor's name, an emergency registrar at the Alfred, amongst other things, and we'll find out more about Beck a little later on in this podcast. Stay tuned for that. Once again, I want to mention our thanks to our great sponsors and supporters of the podcast, Corio Waste Management. Of course, so you can just dial up their website. That's coriowm.com.au. Or you can check out their Facebook page for all the latest news and what they're up to. And, of course, ABC Homes, they've got a Facebook page also, Instagram. You can give them a buzz on 131 828. They are open. They continue to build great homes. We know that. Their display homes, of course, are open by appointment only because of the coronavirus effects. And if you're looking for a home, have a talk to them. The Australian Building Company, ABC Homes, 131 828. Let's get to our first guest on this Big W podcast, and it is the former Prime Minister of Australia and our club patron, Julia Gillard. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Are you keeping busy?
Early on, when every organisation I work with was desperately re-gearing in the face of the pandemic, and that's sort of settled down now as everybody's got to the new normal. But then the thing that's come into focus for me is I'm finalising a book on women and leadership, which will be out in July. So I've been busy with that.
That's obviously part of your role as chair of the Global Institute for Women's Leadership.
It's associated with it. It's a project I decided to do a few years back with a dear colleague of mine, an African woman called Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala. And we got to know each other because I chair the Global Partnership for Education, which focuses on school education in developing countries. And she chairs the Global Vaccine Alliance, which makes sure that vaccines get to people in poorer parts of the world. And we started talking about women and leadership, and we came up with this idea of writing a book, and now it's taken us to the stage that it's almost being published. But certainly my colleagues at the Global Institute for Women's Leadership have been very helpful with insights into the research.
Are you also, you're a fellow podcaster these days too, a podcast of one's own is going gangbusters for you?
Yes, it is. I'm very much enjoying having turned the tables and becoming the interviewer, asking the questions. Yeah, asking the questions instead of answering them. So the aim of it is to speak to women who have achieved in different fields. So I've spoken to women comedians, women authors, business women, you know, the list goes on,
yeah.
And ask them about their lives and what lessons they've learned along the way. And because the Global Institute for Women's Leadership works from the Virginia Woolf Building in London, And of course, Virginia Woolf was famous for talking about a room of one's own, a woman needing to have a room of one's own, in which she wrote her very famous works. We called it a podcast of one's own.
No, very good. It's going beautifully. Are you enjoying that role of being the interviewer rather than having them fired at you?
Yeah, I like it. It's not always easy, though I don't have to tell you that. You know all about it. You know, different people get talking differently. And so finding the best way of getting people to have a conversation, because I don't want the podcast to be too formal. I want it to be a real conversation. Sometimes it's harder to do that than others. And at the moment, I'm recording the podcast virtually, as are you. So it's a little bit harder when people aren't in the same room. We use video conferencing technology so we can see each other, but it's still a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, it's a challenge. One of the challenges we've been thrown. What's the biggest challenge you've been thrown during this sort of change, as you called it before, the new normal?
The biggest challenge for me has been the work with Beyond Blue. As the pandemic was taking hold, Beyond Blue was seeing huge surges in the number of people who were seeking assistance. And so we had to work very quickly with the Australian government to get a very special service in place so that there was somewhere people could go for information about COVID-19 and about mental health. And there was a dedicated support line where people could speak to a mental health professional. So the CEO, Georgie Harmon of Beyond Blue, and the team did all of the, you know, major work for that. But at a government's level, it did mean we had to turn around and do quite a series of things very quickly.
And look, it had to be ahead of that. I mean, we talk about being ahead of the curve and flattening the curve, but the mental health issue was one that wasn't there at the very start in terms of what the effect it was going to have, but then it started to really kick in now as the longer this goes on, the more it's going to kick in, I would feel.
Yeah, we sort of knew it was coming in the sense that there is psychological research about how people react to isolation. And, you know, for people who have got underlying mental health conditions, it can be more difficult for them to stay on their treatment program. For people who haven't experienced a mental health condition in the past, the isolation can make them feel very anxious or very sad. So we could predict it was coming, but how quickly it came was kind of startling, even in the very early weeks of people being asked to stay home. We were seeing more contacts to Beyond Blue than we'd seen at the height of the bushfire crisis.
Gee whiz.
So, yeah, that was telling us that it was very serious. And, you know, we are saying to people, look, it's, you know, it's a different time. It's understandable that people would feel anxiety about, am I going to get sick? Is a family member going to get sick? People would feel the pressure coming from the financial distress that's around. You know, I've lost my job, you know, on the job keeper payment, or my business has had to shut down. So all of that, you know, is normal human reaction. But we are looking for people to be alert to the fact that they could be moving from just an ordinary reaction into getting quite obsessive, unable to think about anything else, not sleeping properly, feeling distressed, perhaps using alcohol more than they normally would, not enjoying things that normally give them some pleasure. And we're saying before you get to, you know, beyond that stage to the next stage, reach out, get some help.
Are you concerned that we're reaching a point now where if something doesn't give soon, that we'll see another wave of, not of the virus, but another wave of the effects of the virus?
Yeah, I think, you know, the longer people are isolated, obviously, the more profound the effects. I mean, you know, I don't want to overput that, but it just makes intuitive sense, doesn't it, that, you know, the Yep. more people are kept away from each other, the greater the pressure feels. But, you know, we've got to remind ourselves that we are being asked to stay home for a reason. You know, we're saving lives by doing that, and it's not every day of the week that people in ordinary occupations get to say to themselves, I'm saving lives, yeah. But we can all say that about ourselves now. So it is, you know, vital to balance the health issues with the virus, with everything else.
How have you viewed how it's been handled across not only Australia but across the world, the whole reaction to it? And, I mean, as someone who has basically run a country, how have you felt about the different ways that each organisation's gone about dealing with it?
I think, you know, if I was going to summarise it, I think that a crisis always shows underlying fragilities. So, you know, a bit like the virus is worse for people who have got underlying health conditions, I think the virus is worse for societies that have got some underlying frailties. So if you don't have a good health care system, yeah, then it's really going to show. And fortunately in Australia, you know, it's our healthcare system always needs good attention and support and all the rest of it. But by the standards of the world, we've got a very good, very equitable healthcare system. People can get treatment if they need it. So compared with being in, you know, the United States, where money matters so much more for who gets treatment, I think, you know, we're as well positioned as you can be to deal with a crisis like this. And that showed.
Leadership is something that you're very obviously learned in for a number of reasons, and obviously this book that we've talked about on women's leadership. But there'll be books written about the leadership shown by countries and shown by organisations during this particular pandemic. How have you viewed that?
I think that there will be a lot written about leadership in this pandemic. I think that there will be lessons learned, and that's really important because whilst we'll obviously all be hoping that nothing like this happens again ever, or at least for a very long, long, long time, something can always be learned from crisis response for other forms of difficulty. So we do need to work through all of that. I just hope when we get to that stage that it's not so much about finger pointing, yeah, as it really is about distilling the best knowledge for the future.
Constructive criticism rather than just, you know, you did this wrong, you did that wrong, it would be really handy. Hey, on a personal note, have you cleaned everything? Have you restacked bookshelves? Have you resorted your sock drawer? Have you done all that stuff to keep your sort of mind occupied as much as anything else?
Oh, I wish. No, it's on the to-do list. Sorting out of clothes and that sort of thing. You should periodically do work out what you're actually wearing and what really should be donated. But I'd have to say I've had enough on during these weeks to have not got there yet. And if I was really honest, Kevin, it's not the kind of thing that I relish doing. So I'd really have to be at the end of having done everything before I'd say to myself, right, it's time to get stuck into the sock drawer.
Right. You haven't been done what everybody else has done, has found something on Netflix that you've binged for a while to sort of get you through some idle moments?
Oh, no, I've been certainly watching a few things on Netflix. I've been reading a few good books. So I enjoy both. You know, I think both just give you a bit of a mental break and some time away, and that's really important.
We're all missing the footy, and we're hoping that sport in general will be able to come back at some stage in whatever form it is, and there's lots of different variations of that. But footy's such a part, particularly of the city of Melbourne, that we're really missing it.
Yeah, look, I think we're missing everything to do with the footy. So, yes, of course, we're missing the, you know, watching of the contest, you know, who's going to win, who's going to lose. But the footy comes with so much, you know, social interaction and engagement, just that feeling that you're in a crowd of people who are all focused on the same thing, and the sense you get with the other supporters when you're cheering your team on, and the social interactions at halftime and, you know, on the way to the footy, and the conversations afterwards about what happened. So it is, you know, a big part of the coming together fabric, particularly of Melbourne, but also other parts of the nation. So I think when we get out of this, being able to go to the footy and enjoy it won't be something that we take for granted.
Yeah.
And I do think that this time, as pressurised as it is, it does give us an opportunity to really think about our priorities in life and the things that matter. And when you've got opportunities all day, every day, you know, will I go to the footy? Will I do this? Will I do that? Then it's easy to kind of not show much gratitude for that degree of choice that we've got in our lives.
Yeah.
I hope we do come out of this with a bit more gratitude. Like it's a special thing to be able to, you know, go to a footy match and have fun with your friends. And when we get to do it again, I hope we bring that mindset with us.
There was, I think, the way Australia celebrated or commemorated Anzac Day this year was a really special thing. That might actually be something that we take into the future, because there were some images of the Anzac Day celebrations, very different to what we're used to, but still as touching and as poignant as I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, ultimately, things aren't about form. You know, we do have our rituals and all the rest of it, but things are about spirit and they're about emotion and what people put into it. And that's what we saw this Anzac Day, when we couldn't have the same form, you know, the dawn service, the usual ceremony. We still found a way of being in touch with those sentiments.
The people of the western suburbs of Melbourne, where you who you represented for so many years. I mean, there's some terrific work being done at Vic Uni here, where in fact a professor at Vic Uni in Hoppers Crossing is actually part of a team that's working on trying to find a vaccine for the virus. So there's a lot of great work going on. The people of the west have certainly banded together as you would have expected.
We're thinking about the healthcare workers, the teachers, the childcare workers, the truck drivers, the posties, the scientists, you know, so many categories of profession that from time to time we can take for granted or undervalue. It's a big wake-up call to all of us who's truly essential in our society and doing work that matters so much. And I do hope we take that with us when this is over, that sense that the people who do the caring work, the thoughtful scientific work, the bus driver, the person who picks up the rubbish bins, that we, you know, remember how much we relied on them still going to work when it was tough.
You must be enormously proud of the work that Beyond Blue has done in this forever and a day, to be honest, but particularly in this time of crisis, certainly have risen to the challenge brilliantly.
They have. I mean, the team's just been remarkable, and like everybody else, they're, you know, working from home, trying to learn new skills. I mean, I know not everybody gets to work from home, but the sort of people who do that office work are largely working from home. The people who do our mental health telephone answering are all working from home. So for them to not only do their ordinary jobs, but to turn around and surge capacity whilst they're trying to do all of that in a corner of the lounge room while the kids are home from school, that's a pretty amazing thing to have got done.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you been dabbling in the kitchen at all? Has that given you a chance to spend a bit more time in the kitchen?
I'm not much of a cook, and I suspect it would take many years of lockdown to deal with that problem. So I find ways of eating enough. Don't worry about that. I'm most assuredly not starving to death. But you're not going to see me in an episode of MasterChef busting something amazing out.
Julie, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. The Werribee Footy Club obviously is really proud to have you as our patron, as we have since the early 2000s. And I wish you well and good health. Let's hope we get through this and get out the other end and see you at Avalon Airport Oval in the not too distant future.
Yeah, we definitely will get through it, and we'll be back at the footy together. Thanks very much.
Fantastic to have Julia on the program. Quality person, and really is terrific to have her associated with our football club and doing some fantastic work. And particularly, as she mentioned there, if you are in, if you are struggling a bit and you do need help, there is help. Ring Beyond Blue. There's a lot of organisations who are around helping out at the moment. They're one of the premier ones, one that we're very proud to be associated with here at the football club, and one that even though I hope you don't need to take advantage of, if it is there for you to do exactly that. So please reach out if you need to. All right, let's get to our next guest on our podcast this time round for the Big W, and it is our brand new club doctor, Dr. Rebecca Beaton. Joining me now on the Big W podcast is our club doctor, Dr. Rebecca Beaton, who has joined us this year and now joins us on the podcast. Thanks for your time, Beck. Appreciate it. On a weekend, we're recording this. Is it a weekend off?
It is a weekend off for me, yeah. Yeah, rarity, yeah.
Which under football circumstances, you wouldn't have had the weekend off. We would have been busy with the team. So I guess let's go back and trace your steps. How do we get you to the club?
Well, I was late in the year last year, and I was looking for a sports job to do for the coming year. And I heard that one of my mates got me onto Werribee having an opening for a doctor.
Yep.
Now, I live far out in the eastern suburbs, so I was a little bit dubious about Werribee. It's pretty much the opposite side of town. But anyway, I came across for the interview and pretty much got talked into it almost from Mark Williams and Stu Ballack. I think I really gelled with them in the interview, and I was really excited about what they were bringing to the club. So, I just decided to come on board, and here I am.
Yeah, one of those light bulb moments where you just go, yeah, this is the place I think I should be at.
Yeah, absolutely. They've had a bit of a younger group coming through in the medical team, and that seemed to sort of work well with what I was coming through as well. And, yeah, I was looking forward to what they were bringing on.
Beck, you've spent the last couple of years in the Richmond Women's Program. Did that sort of give you a taste of what was and a bigger role was a more appealing part of that?
So the Richmond Women's Program, that was a really great experience for me. I came on when the program was just starting up, so it was, and I'd never done an Aussie Rules job before as well. So this was all a really brand new experience for me. So setting up that group with those guys as well, and coming through, developing those girls, was a really good experience. And then on the other hand, having access to that elite club environment through the Richmond Football Club was a really good experience. And I had a lot of mentorship from the club doctor down there, Greg Hickey. So that was really helpful in giving me a lot of experience in coming into a men's side now in the Werribee BFL club.
When you took this role on at the Werribee Footy Club, what you thought would happen and what's finished up happening are two absolutely different universes.
So I guess we pretty much got right to the peak of pre-season, and we were really looking forward to getting stuck into the season. So the pre-season for us in the medical team is usually the hardest bit, because it's about trying to get the boys ready and fit and healthy for the season to come. And we got to that stage and we were really looking forward to it, and then the pandemic struck, and now we're in a completely different situation. So I wasn't expecting to take this much responsibility on all at once, all of a sudden. Sort of the club's looking to you a little bit for a bit of guidance and leadership as to how to take this on. And, I mean, overall in the healthcare community, none of us really know how to tackle this beast. It's brand new to everybody. So we're just taking it one day at a time, and it's like you said, it's been a completely different experience to what I expected, but it's been going really well.
So what have you had to change in? I mean, obviously, there's the social distancing is the initial thing, and the fact that the club isn't open for business is the second part of it. But what's been the biggest challenge for you in sort of doing what you need to do with the players and with the coaching staff?
Well, initially, I'm a part-time worker anyway, so I did have to do a bit of stuff over the phone anyway prior to this happening. So that wasn't something that needed to be changed too much. I can still when the boys have an issue, whether it be a medical or a physical injury. I am kind of used to managing that stuff over the phone a little bit. Yep. My initial, major challenge, I think, was going to be the checking in just in the general welfare and figuring out how the boys were getting on generally. And initially I thought, oh, geez, this is going to be a mammoth task, like texting, calling 40, 50 people every on a regular basis. But I've found the opposite. I've found that the boys, the players, the coaching staff and all of the other staff as well have actually been, they've all been checking in on each other regularly. In fact, I've had many players checking in to see if I'm doing okay. So it's actually been the opposite effect. That I thought that was going to be the biggest challenge, but actually it's been really easy. I've had a lot of feedback to me about the welfare of the players and how everyone's been getting on. So that's been really good. We've done a few sort of regular check-ins on WhatsApp or over Zoom meetings with the other medical staff. But as I said, we're at the end of our pre-season, so most of the boys are in pretty good nick. So yes, we don't have a lot of injuries that we're managing at the moment. And we're not doing any match play or anything at the moment. So we don't have a lot of injuries. It's just sort of managing little niggles and little illnesses as we go along. So it hasn't actually been too hard, that aspect of things.
It's the difficult part also, and we're all going through this, is the not knowing when the start date is and when to push the button.
Yeah, absolutely. You can kind of get a bit of a gauge on how how we're going with our coronavirus, the frequency that people are coming up positive and how it's affecting the healthcare system. And you can obviously see that in Victoria and in Australia that's been tracking it's exceeded our expectations how that's gone.
Yeah.
So you can see by that there is a possibility that we'd be able to get back, whereas sort of earlier on we're thinking, well, you know, that's not going to happen for a long time, so we don't need to worry too much about that in the immediate future. But now we've been tracking in a good direction, and we're hearing from the AFL that there may be some chances of getting back to playing footy, that we are starting to think about what we're going to do if we get to go back to training, and hopefully that soon. So it is obviously a challenge not knowing, A, when we can start training again, and then B, how long there is between training and games. That's a challenge, but we're still sort of planning that it's going to be a short period, and what we need to do from a medical point of view to plan for coming back for training and then hopefully games at some stage. And I'm getting a lot of guidance from the club on that, which has been really good. And then we just really need to wait and hear what the powers that be tell us.
Yeah. There'll obviously be a lot of medical parameters around everything that happens at the club, though, in terms of, you know, contact and hygiene, all those things that I guess you'll be across.
Yeah, I think the major differences we'll be seeing is we'll probably be looking at potentially training in some smaller groups. Yeah. We probably won't be able to use the gym, I anticipate, so our conditioning may be done sort of out on the track a little bit more. So because it's going to be too difficult to keep that really strict hygiene in using the gym equipment, there'll be a lot stricter screening of players and staff coming into the club rooms, limitation of people who can come down into the rooms as well, and then sort of a bit more involvement with the hygiene with the balls and the other equipment, and then also hand hygiene as well. So they're probably the major changes that we're going to be seeing, and I see them occurring long term. That's going to be, over the next couple of years at least, until we can get onto a vaccine and changing the course of the virus.
It'll be what we're lovingly referring to now as the new normal.
Yeah, the new normal, absolutely, and not shaking hands, which is probably the thing that I'm struggling with the most. and then there'll be the other aspects of crowds and that type of thing, which is sort of above my board. The club will be dealing with that type of stuff. But, yeah, that'll be probably the major thing that will be changing.
It's a totally different universe to the one you signed on to when you signed up for the club. A little bit on your background, Beck. You're a Tassie girl?
I'm a Tasmanian, yes. Yeah, that's correct. So I grew up there. My dad's from Scotland and my mum's from Tasmania. I grew up on the northwest coast, so very much in Aussie rules, I guess, territory. But my dad being from Scotland, I was a follower of rugby union up until very late age, I guess, which is a bit abnormal for a Tasmanian. And yeah, so I trained there, went to the University of Tasmania, and then and have ended up in Melbourne after a little stint overseas.
And where did the sports medicine kind of interest come from? Was that just a natural thing that you wanted to do from the early days, or was that something that happened of recent times?
I think it's probably genetic. My dad had an interest in it, but it wasn't really a formal training. There wasn't really formal training for it back when he trained. So we would always stand on the sidelines in the rugby matches, and he'd sort of be the unofficial team doctor. And then, yeah, coming up through uni, I was always interested in it, but was sort of led off into a different direction for various reasons. And then I always had an interest in it, but didn't really, formalise that as a training prospect until I was came back to Melbourne. And you're a bit more involved with sport when you're in Melbourne. It's kind of everywhere. But also I had some minor injuries myself, which gave me a different perspective on how sports medicine can integrate it into people's lifestyles. Yeah. And then I got really interested in it from there.
Well, we're very happy you did, and very happy to have you at the Werribee Footy Club. You work at the Alfred. Is it a manic time in the health industry at the moment?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy trying to prepare for everything over the last couple of months. It's similar to football in that we don't really know when it was going to hit us, how bad it was going to be.
Yeah.
So we were sort of preparing for the worst. Unfortunately, for the restrictions that the federal and state government has brought in has given us an exceptional amount of breathing space and time to prepare to get all the training that we needed, all the equipment we needed, and get some increased ICU beds and all of that type of thing. So that period where we were training and preparing was pretty manic, and then there was but the actual workload from a medical point of view in the emergency department we've seen a bit of a decrease in the last, I'd say, 3 weeks.
That's not a bad
primarily
thing.
Primarily, no, it's not a bad thing at all. Less people out playing sport,
yeah.
On the roads, all of that type of stuff. Our road tolls, our road deaths has gone down dramatically, all of that type of thing, which has been a good aspect of it. So, yeah, we've had that time to prepare, so that's been good.
Yeah, absolutely. Rebecca, appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Let's hope in the next few weeks we get some news one way or the other that hopefully we can get up and running as a football club again, and we can show you what the football club's actually all about as opposed to what it's been so far. But appreciate your time.
Yeah, okay. Thanks very much for having me.
Well, thanks to our new club doctor, Dr. Rebecca Beaton, and, of course, our club patron, Julia Gillard, for joining me on this edition of the Big W Podcast. With thanks, of course, to our terrific sponsors. I mentioned ABC Homes, 131 828. And, of course, their Facebook is another way you can find out exactly what's going on, and their website. And Corio Waste Management, coriowm.com.au. Also, of course, all their news on their Facebook page as well. But Bland Holden and Pacific Werribee have been long-time supporters of our club. Bland Holden, our major sponsor now into the 21st year. They've got a Facebook page which has got some really interesting stuff on it, including some tips on keeping your car healthy during the coronavirus, believe it or not. Really handy. And, of course, they've got a big demo sale on at the moment. They are open for business and would be very happy to have a chat to you on 9999 3335, 9999 3335. Bland Holden for 21 years, our major sponsor at the Werribee Football Club. And Pacific Werribee, of course, which is also open for business. I mean, the takeaway restaurants there are doing, or the restaurants there are doing takeaways. They've got a big Mother's Day promotion on at the moment. They've got new opening hours. All those details you can find on any of their social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or the Pacific Werribee website as well. So thanks to all those organisations for their support, and to all our sponsors and supporters. We will keep you informed of what's going on at the football club via our social media platforms up on the website, or on Facebook, Instagram, or on Twitter. Take care, be safe. Hopefully some good news on the way very soon. Hope you've enjoyed this edition of the Big W Podcast. Until the next time, I'm Kevin Hillier.
From the playing fields of Melbourne to the stands of Chernside Park,